Good morning, folks. July 8th, Tuesday morning. We hope you had a great Monday evening. Be careful. They got some rain moving through the area. We want to make sure that we get through the day safely. We have a great show lined up today. We're going to visit with Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola. He's a former NOPD chief, former chief in Nashville, and also the former head of the state police in Washington State. A recent New York Times article outlines that half Americans that are murdered, they never find the killer. So the murderers get away with it. Most crimes in this country go unsolved. And the article talks about how this emboldens criminals and potentially leads to more violence. So we'll talk to former Chief Serpas about that article. Jerry Bologna joins us in the beginning of the 12 o'clock hour. He's the president and CEO of JEDCO. And they have a huge announcement about the creation of the Jefferson Parish Design District, a 320-acre area located in Old Jefferson near the Orleans-Jefferson Parish line. And we'll talk about how this is grown into a hub, how they hope to grow it and further grow it into a hub for a whole host of issues, and we'll talk about that. Ira Melman, media director for FAIR. In the big, beautiful bill, there's a lot of money for Homeland Security. We'll talk about the amounts. We'll talk about what they are dedicated to and how the Trump administration will go about being able to integrate that operationally into all of what's happening at the border. The top of the 11 o'clock hour is our NOLA Coalition segment, and this week we have the Chief Operations Officer for the Youth Empowerment Project, Jerome Jupiter, and we'll talk about what YEP is doing here recently. At 10:30, Michael Kimball, he's the fire chief in Baton Rouge. He's the fire chief of the Baton Rouge Fire Department, excuse me. And he's been tasked with directing the Louisiana Task Force in Kerrville, Texas. Yes, we have spent a number of folks from Louisiana to assist our brothers and sisters in the first responder community. We'll get an update from Michael about what he's hearing from his folks in Kerrville. Something very unique, something we don't usually typically see here in Louisiana, and the challenges as they provide assistance in Kerrville, Texas. So, day two of the week, yesterday we talked a little bit about in my monologue the mayor. She's kind of the gift that keeps on giving. You know, yesterday we talked about how she's just been talking and talking and talking on her Oh, Woe Is Me tour as she travels around the country and hosting people here in New Orleans. I said yesterday, it's really an embarrassment. She doesn't want to talk about why the criticism that's coming her way ever. She is completely devoid of looking at herself in the mirror critically and gaining a better understanding for the frailties of her administration and what she's done. The criticism will continue because the issues continue to reveal themselves. And there was an article the author James Finn in NOLA.com posted yesterday. We've talked about this on the show a lot. And that's the settlement of the Wisner Trust. So the Wisner Trust owns a bunch of properties. One of the most valuable pieces of property is in Port Fouchon, one of the most valuable ports in the state of Louisiana. A lot of traffic, oil service supply boats going out into the Gulf of America and dealing with oil production right there. The trust distributes about $9 million a year, and historically it did that to a bunch of recipient beneficiaries outlined in the trust. But the trust is expired. It's run its life. Of course, the heirs never wanted that mailbox money to go away, right? Who would? You go pick up your check every month or whatever period of time they're distributing cash, and you go and you get it, right? The city should be equally as excited about getting mailbox money. You don't have to do anything for it. You don't have to do any work. You have to do very little. It was left to them by a very wealthy individual. This whole saga started under the Landrieu administration and tried to determine whether or not the trust was actually valid any longer. It was for a period of time. It had run its course. What does that mean legally? What happens to the designated beneficiaries? And who actually has what is called naked ownership of all these assets that are generating income for the city of New Orleans and the recipient beneficiaries? Well, that's run its course. The court has actually ruled in favor of the city. But here's the caveat. The lawsuit was not brought by the city administration. No. This mayor, this crucified mayor, felt that the heirs and the beneficiaries should continue to receive their benefits, the money being distributed. She enters into a secret deal with them, contrary to the city charter. No one can figure out what it is, but it gives her control, right? She has a lot to say inside the star chamber of the Wisner Trust. She likes that. We've known that she's always like that, right? But she's making a choice. The entity, the city of New Orleans, or satisfying her thirst for power. And it's never really been more exhibited than here recently when there's a deal worked out with one of the recipient beneficiaries, Tulane, who's redeveloping Old Charity. Old Charity is an albatross that hangs out there. It's a massive structure that's going to take a lot of work, a lot of luck, and some Hail Mary passes to be caught in order to bring this to fruition. Is it worth it? Yeah. We're trying to develop a medical district. There's a whole lot of upside there. It's a huge building. It's a historic building. Everyone pretty much on the same sheet of music as it relates to that, but it's all about money, right? So the city council, in its wisdom, I might add, involves themselves in negotiating this deal with Tulane. Well, Tulane is going to relinquish all of their rights under this trust and some other peripheral issues that are important in this $20 million deal with them. Our crucified mayor, in her brilliance, vetoes the deal, which basically says, I still want the beneficiaries to receive their money, and I do not want the city to receive the dollars in totality. My preference would be to screw all the taxpayers and make sure that the actions that I take inure to the benefit of some beneficiaries that are actually here in the city and others that don't even live in the city any longer. And I would much prefer to look the court case in the face that ruled on behalf of the city, where the city would get the $9 million. Because remember, we got all kinds of money, right? Money is not the object. Until money was. And they stopped paying vendors again on time. So this is a very calculated, really brilliant, smart move, right? Have the opportunity to get $9 million free and clear. Don't have to do anything for it. Otherwise known as mailbox money. But no, I need to make sure that I show the council who's the boss. And if that means I need to cut off my nose, despite my crucified body, I am willing to do it. I mean, all things considered, you're being crucified. How much more pain can there be cutting your nose off despite your face, right? So we'll continue to exhibit a level of ignorance and stupidity, actually probably bypassing some of her sister mayors who have also been crucified. And I'm not sure what hilltop they're all on together, but they can wallow in their own stupidity and ignorance together. And there might be a trophy as to who can be more ignorant and stupid than the other ones. I would love to see a family or anyone in this same position say, oh no, the document speaks for itself. It was for a time period. It's run its course. Obviously, the individual that set this up wanted this to happen. And no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it this way to the detriment of the taxpaying citizens of this city. It's quite the grab to own part of Port Fouchon, right? In fact, I think Helena Moreno, I saw the other day, she was out there looking at the facility, gaining a better understanding of what it is that the city actually owns. And there's other properties as well. And trying to, I guess, probably figure this out, good luck on that one, as to why we would want to give this up. Because I don't see any good reason to do so. It makes absolutely no sense, right? And you know what's interesting is that the mayor, again, is not looking at anything as to what's going on. And all what's traveling here on a parallel path is, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow, we got the French Quarter Board seeking an emergency trash hauler for the Vieux Carré, contrary to what the mayor has done as well. So we've got this coming from every direction. I mean, these issues that keep coming up and coming up and coming up, and she wonder why she's getting criticism. But this actually makes no sense. I have racked my brain. I've asked at least 20 people, can somebody please tell me what's the deal? What's the backroom explanation for what the mayor's trying to do here? No one has been able to articulate a good reason for this being done. Which leads me to believe this is just all about her and about exercising whatever presumed or actual authority that she actually has to rub it into the face of the council to show that they're not going to get their way. She's going to do it her way or the highway, and she doesn't care about who is going to suffer in the interim at all. And whether or not this $9 million is of any meaning. Now, she claims that the payment risks depriving funding from multiple projects impacting the quality of life for New Orleanians, is what she wrote in her veto message, in her letter. But she's never identified these things. She's never made her case, one way or the other, to let the people know. She's never been transparent. Nobody ever really knows what it is that she's talking about, and whether or not she ever had the authority to do what she did in the first place. It's amazing that this is where we find ourselves. It would be nice if one of these panelists, as one of these kumbaya moments that they're all having with the mayor, would ask her when she's out there on Oh Woe Is Me tour about this. Please articulate your position. Why would you deprive the city of the totality of the proceeds from the trust? It makes absolutely no sense. You're working against the people that you're actually representing and has yet to articulate why. Why that's a better approach than any other approach. The irony is, a number of the beneficiaries, they know that they're not entitled to any more. They recognize it. In fact, some are openly negotiating with the council to bring a complete and total end to this thing in an attempt to do some projects like Tulane being one, you know, this $20 million, and that's it. They're out and they're moving forward and the whole nine yards. That's what it looks like to me. But this mayor knows better. She's going to stand in the way of all of this and not unwind it and not take the dollars, not take the money, because we don't need it. We got it all. Lie after lie after lie. Lack of transparency. Never any transparency. Just never. And not to mention never going before the council to explain herself. That would be beneath her. Interesting. It was a body that she actually rose to being mayor from. One would think that there would be a little bit more deference to the council based on the experience that she had, that she would go there and explain exactly why she's doing this. But not this mayor. That's all beneath her. And now that she's being crucified, everything else is even further beneath her, because she's taking and experiencing all of the pain for the ills and the failures of those that just don't understand the brightly lit path that this city should take. And it's incumbent upon her to bring the light for everyone to see, so we can continue down this path to a place that she thinks we ought to be. Unfortunately, most people are smarter than that, and they're not willing to follow that cult, because they already know what it looks like, what it feels like, what it tastes like to be in a place that we should not be in because of ignorant decisions haven't been made and the lack of execution by this administration. Therein lies the friction. We'll just have to see where this ends. Hopefully on Thursday, we have seven wise folks that vote in favor of overriding this veto. And if your council person does not vote to override this veto, you need to demand answers as to why anyone would support this craziness of this administration and not take the whole, take less than, and never offer up a legitimate explanation to do so. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We have all been following the tragic events in Kerrville, Texas, the floodwaters. So many folks, 105 killed, still a number of folks missing. And anytime there is a catastrophic event like this, governors and states reach out to their brother and sister states to step up and lend a hand, and thankfully Louisiana is one we've asked for help before, and we give help when we are asked. And I think everybody felt strongly about going out and helping Texas in dealing with this issue. And our guest that joins us is Michael Kimball. He is the fire chief of the Baton Rouge Fire Department, and he's been charged with directing the Louisiana task force that was sent to Kerrville. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on today.
Well, first, let me thank you for all that you and your team and everyone from Louisiana is doing. I know that the residents in Texas really appreciate it. One thing that I've heard over and over again on the news is they are so appreciative of everyone thinking about them, assisting them, and praying for them. This is tough work. It continues to rain there. Swift water rescues are not easy. They are incredibly dangerous. If you would, Michael, kind of give us a little bit of the description of the landscape and what your team is experiencing there.
Yeah, so from what the team is reporting back is that there's a different terrain of a little hilly area. It's more than what we're accustomed to here in Louisiana. And with the waterfall they've received, it's just pushed a lot of water into some areas that was not expected. And that's what they've been told, that nobody knew this was coming. That's where the event started to take place and unfold. But our team is out there now assisting the local departments of whatever needs that may arise.
Yeah. Michael, I've been told that, you know, part of the issue with the Hill Country, I used to hunt in the Hill Country. I hunted right outside of Kerrville, in between there and all the way to Johnson City and Marble Falls and Round Mountain, Texas, which kind of creates a big area within the Hill Country. If you had rainfall on one side of a hill as opposed to the other side of a hill, which may be a differential of about 250 yards, the impact could be vastly different from one side to the other side depending on the amount of rainfall. And I'm sure you guys are hearing stuff like that.
Yeah, that's correct. And you may say Marble Falls. That's exactly where our team is at right now in that area. It's just a different terrain from what we're accustomed to. The terrain is completely different, and unfortunately, the event took place, but the people are there now to assist. Again, it's just having the proper equipment and training to be able to adapt and handle those type of situations that come to them.
Do you have any feel for, I think it's raining there now, I was checking the radar earlier, how much that is actually complicating this recovery effort at the present time?
So in the area that, again, our team is located, the rain is starting to come to a stop, which is a good thing. So the amount of service that's needed is not as high as it was when it first started. But as the rain continues, if it does continue, it just adds more water to what they've already encountered, which, again, picks up the need for our services.
Now, Marble Falls is actually east of Kerrville, a little bit northeast, if my memory serves me correct. I was hearing stories being told that the swath could extend 10 to 14 miles, of devastation. Is that what you guys are hearing and seeing?
We haven't been told that, no, sir.
Okay.
Not to that level.
Any other observations that the team has made that you find interesting or of note?
Well, the same thing that we see every time we go somewhere is the brotherhood and the compassion and the dedication of the men and women that drop everything they have to go assist other first responders and citizens in different parts of the country. The members of the Louisiana Urban Search and Rescue are some of the most heartfelt, dedicated, committed people you've ever met. On 4th of July weekend, they dropped everything they had plans with their family to leave and go help another community. And we've, unfortunately, in Louisiana, you know, we've had our share of impact, and we've had those same people that we're going to help now have come and helped us over the last 15, 20 years, you know. So, but you see that camaraderie and the brotherhood of people helping other people, right? And that's what humans are about, right? And the good people of Louisiana, we always go and will help do at any moment. And that just shows the compassion that people have. And that's what you always see when we have these type of events.
We are a state that obviously have bought into urban search and rescue and make sure that we go through the training and everything else, obviously because of the flooded areas of southeast, southwest Louisiana as a result of hurricanes. I talked about swift water, responses and the difficulties of same. A lot of it is same equipment, but that team, trains in swift water responses as well, right?
That is 100% correct, sir. Part of our urban search and rescue, we have multiple responsibilities and divisions within our team. And this is just one of those fashions that the Swiftwater technicians, they go through a very rigorous school to become certified, and they're taught how to maneuver in swift water by swimming, how to remove people out of the water, how to drive a boat in the water. You can get in a boat and drive across Lake Pontchartrain all day long, but you get into the swift water, the boats that we have, you have to know what you're doing to be prepared. And we've gotten a lot of support. Without the governor's office, Governor Landry, the fire marshal's office, Chief Brian Adams, my local mayor of the city of Baton Rouge, Coach Sid Edwards, we are very fortunate that we have the support that makes this happen. Without the support of our local officials, we wouldn't have these capabilities.
Yep. It's going to be interesting. Have they talked about any projections of what, if this rain trend continues, whether or not they feel like that's going to exacerbate some of the areas peripheral to what is flooded, whether that'll create issues in these other areas?
So, you know, from experience, the amount of rain they originally got dumped on them was unexpected. And so it has put an impact on their areas. Now, if they get a little rain, I don't know that if they receive just a regular storm, would it have as much of an impact as what we've already dealt with. I wouldn't think so from prior experience. You got to remember, in 2016, here in East Baton Rouge Parish in our area here, we received almost 30 inches of rain within 2 days, right?
Yep.
That's what they got up on them within a few hours. And the terrain made it even worse. You know, they're saying reports of what some water, some rivers or creeks rose, what, 20-something feet within a couple hours? You know, a little rain make a big difference, I would think, right now. But I do know that through the, our talk groups of the USAR teams, they are starting to stand some teams down. There are some teams already en route that have canceled, which is a good sign. That right there tells you they're getting a hold of everything is being handled. And another, you know, other parts of the area, now they're doing delayering through debris, trying to locate any missing people that's still unaccounted for. That's the next step that will go into this operation. Through those areas. In the county that our team is currently in, there's one person that's still missing. Unfortunately, that was the fire chief of that department. While he was performing his duties, he tragically was swept away and has not been located yet.
We definitely keep each and every one of the families of the victims and of everyone in that area and our thoughts and prayers for sure. Just as an aside and really curiosity, we've heard a lot about the rainfall in the short duration or period of time. Have y'all heard anything about how the velocity of the water as it was making its way down the Guadalupe River?
We've heard some numbers. I don't have those numbers right in front of me. It was unbelievable the amount of cubic feet per second that water was moving. It was something that I don't have the number right here in front of me. I'm sorry about that. But it was a lot.
Yeah. I got to imagine it was something that probably most of those USAR teams had never seen before, right?
I would 100% agree with that comment. I mean, again, nobody was prepared for this, from what I understand. It was you can prepare and have plans for everything. But in our line of work as public safety officials and men and women that go out and put their life on the line every single day, we plan and we prepare. But when that alarm goes off and we respond to an incident, you have to have the knowledge of how to handle it. Sometimes we have to step back and figure out what's the next step. And some things, it takes more resources. And it sounds like, listening to what happened there, they just had a big impact really, really quick and did a phenomenal job. A lot of lives were saved. And that's what we need to remember.
Truly amazing that we didn't lose more people. I'm going to be quite honest with you, because that's a very popular riverbed. It goes through a bunch of popular areas for the summertime, you know, people trying to cool down, being in the river and this and that and everything else. I mean, it just, and then all the kid camps that are all along there, you know, almost every day you talk to somebody that had a child that went to a camp in that area or has children or grandkids at a camp in that area, not necessarily Camp Mystic, but, you know, went through horrible couple of days trying to find out, because some communication systems were down, and trying to find out whether or not their kids were safe or not. I mean, I just can't even imagine going through that experience, right?
That had to be an unknown feeling that I feel for those parents and those family members, right? But again, a lot of lives were saved by the heroic men and women of the fire service and law enforcement, and EMTs, and just the average normal human being. You know, everybody was helping each other, and that's what makes humans great. People help each other, and that's what, you know, there's no doubt that happened in this incident here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, Michael Kimble, Fire Chief, Baton Rouge Fire Department, and who is charged with directing the Louisiana Task Force in Kerrville. They are stationed in Marble Falls, Texas, which is, as I said, just a little northeast of Kerrville. Thank you so much for all you do. Please know that each and every one of the members of your team are in our thoughts and prayers, and stay safe.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a shout. We can talk about anything. We have some time. Stay with us. You know, what's interesting is how many folks have taken this tragedy and have made it a partisanship issue. And what's even more interesting, especially for me, because I am very familiar with that area of the country, haven't spent a number of years, a number of weeks hunting, deer hunting throughout that area, so many different times, understanding the terrain, understanding how the flows work, and you know it, and how difficult it is when you say, well, we're going to have 2 to 3 inches of rainfall, and it all depends where that rain falls, right, as to what is going to ultimately be impacted. If it's over this group of hills to the east or to the north or to the west or to the south, the impacts could be incredibly different. And so it's not as easily determinable as when we have rainfall in a bowl, right? So we're completely surrounded by a levee. And if we have 25 inches of rain to the west of us, maybe over close to Kenner, right? We know that it could potentially impact a lot of different areas. We're in a bowl. Their situation and the landscape there is entirely different, way different. And so you get accustomed to serious rainfall amounts and what ultimately happens and what it may be, and jump into conclusions as to who is responsible, and then trying to make it be the federal government because of possibly some cuts in the National Weather Service or some cuts in other areas. You know, I can tell you as a first responder leader in this jurisdiction, I never worried about those folks at that level doing what they were going to do or not do. I didn't control that. It was about all that I could do and what the JPSO could do. And we focused on those things that we controlled and tried to make sure that we were best prepared, better prepared after every event, learned from every event, gained a better understanding of how the flow, the drainage system works, where the water flowed, this, where our challenges were going to be, where did we pre-stage equipment, where did we do all of those things that were necessary to be done. The level of ignorance of people who have never worked a swift water event, the level of ignorance of people who have never managed people that have risked their lives in order to save others, the level of ignorance of those that have not been there on the front line with family members, mothers, dads, grandmothers, grandfathers, to sit there and articulate and engage in conjecture about fault and the level of ignorance of people who probably have never been to the Hill Country, separate and apart from the reporting on this event, never knew about a Hill Country, and never understood the hydrology of the Guadalupe River or any of the other tributaries, to include the Colorado River and others, is just astounding to me that they would sit there and try and assess blame at this point in time. That is the peak of ignorance, in my view. You know nothing. You bring nothing to the table. You bring no life experience. You bring no geographical experience. You bring no management experience. You bring nada. And you are talking out of the proverbial, I don't think I can say it on air. You know where I'm going. We'll be right back. Folks, we'll visit with Ronald Surpass at 12:30 about a recent New York Times article that reveals half Americans' murderers get away. They're never caught. Most crimes go unsolved. We'll talk about that. Jerry Bologna, president and CEO of JETCO, joins us about the creation of the Jefferson Parish Design District. Ira Melman from FAIR will talk about the provisions in the Big Beautiful Bill for Homeland Security. And at 11, right after the top of the hour news break, we will be joined by Jerome Jupiter, Chief Operations Officer for the Youth Empowerment Project, and we'll talk about how they are engaging with underserved young folks throughout our community. So stay with us. We have a lot coming up here. This is Newell on WWL.